I think I adopted pretty early both a love of data and manipulation of data and scraping data and looking for it, but also at the simultaneous questioning of it, doubts about how we employ data, how we put it to use, how we make it public, how we select the data that we represent, how we visualize it now with this evolving ease of accessing data, the explosion in the amount of data that we can have access to, and the tools that we have to visualize it, everything from free mapping that you can get via Google to just any kind of assistance that even us brain dead types on basic computer tools can put together a decent spreadsheet these days, so it is out there and it's proliferating, and it kind of tracks this nagging doubt I've had about data going back to the days when my first computer-assisted reporting project was in 1988 and 89 with the late, great Los Angeles Herald Examiner, where we used color transparencies and we drew dots on transparencies where we systematically looked at the cost of living between South Central and Westwood. And that project back in 1989 at the Herx was called The Poor Pay More, because we systematically showed that in any slice of life in those neighborhoods, the cost of living was much higher in the poor neighborhood. And for example, one piece of data that a lot of people don't look at when they're measuring, say, rents, it's not the aggregate or the cost of the apartment itself, but we broke it down to the cost of square foot for the apartment. And which is why in poor neighborhoods, a lot of people double up and triple up, and you have a higher density in those apartments, because the square footage cost is actually higher in a lot of poor neighborhoods. It's funny because the methodology still stands today. I mean, you could apply what we did by hand, and now with a lot of the computer tools that are out there, and show the same thing still exists. So all these years later, nothing has changed. But what I wanted to my point today is just to kind of get across this the doubt your results, this idea that you should doubt your results, you should always question yourself. And as an investigative reporter for all these years, that's always been, in many cases, my role in different places, is just to be the in-house cynic and the in-house doubter. And so I would always take a role gladly of questioning our results and questioning our thesis. And I think it's really helped over the years, avoid problems and achieve greater success when you report, because now as you ask yourself about data, you employ the basic tenets of journalism. Before I get that, I wanted to point out, this is a beautiful essay that was done at the Toe Center for Digital Journalism by one of my former reporters that basically shows, using algorithms, a robot can do what we do as journalists with the right kinds of inputs. You can actually have a robot produce an article, and it breaks it down wonderfully. You can go to that site. I have the sheet, and it's on it'll be on the IRA thing. But it step by step how a robot can put together a story. But my question is, because it is so easy now, do we want to have a robot do it? And that leads to this question of asking those questions of our results in our work. Do we have it right? All the things that have been brought up prior here, I think, are the things that we should operate with, and that we do as reporters. I mean, that we are not objective individuals when we gather our data and when we do our reporting. And it's never been the case for a journalist. We're never objective. Everything that we do as human beings is driven by subjective decisions and this subjective evaluation. So what ought to be the drivers have always been the drivers for journalists is fairness and accuracy. And I would put in front would be accuracy. So is your data accurate? And once you've established that, then you ask of the data, is it fair? Do we need it? And then you start asking the questions about privacy. And one of the things I wanted to point out is, if I can get it on here, that asks these questions is a piece that was done again at the Toe Center for digital journalism at Columbia. Is the ethics of data-driven journalism, you know, and they bring up the three most recent cases that I think everybody ought to consider and come to, you know, come to your conclusions about, is the gun map in upstate New York that was put out recently, the use of mugshots for private services. That reminds me of an incident that I was sitting in at the Monterey Herald as a guest editor for a little while, and I got a call from a guy on a Monday, and he was still a little groggy. He had just emerged from prison, and he asked if I could send him to the office that where he could pay to have his name removed from the police report because he'd been arrested for public drunkenness, and I said, you know, there is no such thing. You can't extricate yourself from those police logs. And he was surprised. He thought that he had control over his own data that way. And I told him that, no, it's public record. And if we get it when we send the intern down to the cop shop to get the overnight logs, your name's going to be on that. And he just sort of freaked out. But I fortunately looked at what we had gathered the night before, and his name wasn't on there. But I told him that, you know, there's still a chance that it'll show up. So that, I think, reminded me again, is just like this public and private divide. Just because we have the data, do we always need to put it out there? And of course, the NSA papers on surveillance. I mean, these are things that we ought to be talking to ourselves about repeatedly, and just asking questions of all that. So, and I'll give a quick example. Garantzberg, who I think I saw her walking in a few years ago, reminded the nation with a very nicely done article about how Latinos are now the dominant population in federal detention. And what's interesting about this is that it shows us a pretty stark and interesting trend that everybody needs to be talking about. And Garantz's article is very nicely nuanced. It has all the good content and context as to why this is. But when I remember this story, and I remember first reading it, I think it was in the Washington Post in a brief, and the Post brief ended right here after the first couple of graphs. So you only get a glimpse of why it is that Latinos are now the dominant population in federal detention. It has something to do with immigration, but it wasn't properly explained in a lot of briefs that I saw, short, truncated versions of this nicely nuanced AP story. In newspapers and in other places and other outlets, ended up being just a couple of graphs. So the takeaway, if you just look at it, was that, well, Latinos are the dominant criminal force in our country now. When the reality was is that what's driving this was a change in the way the U.S. government interprets and executes immigration law. And the majority of the Latinos who are in federal detention are there for immigration violations. And the majority of those immigration violations is the simple act of having returned at least a second or third time illegally into the U.S., which prior to 1996 and subsequent dates was not really considered or enforced as a felony. Now that reentry can be considered a felony. And so in the old days, the Latinos or mostly Mexicans who crossed the border without papers were just simply turned around and sent back across the border. Those folks were never put into the system. The laws since the application of the laws have since changed. Now everybody goes through the system. And if in the records they find out that you've crossed 3, 4, 5 times without documents, you can be subject to a felony prosecution and face real serious detention time of up to 2 years at least. So it's a matter of looking at the data and interpreting the data. And there's some other ones that I have on here too, and where we ask ourselves, just because we have the data, do we need to get into them and put them out there? The best example is the Sacramento Bee's state employee salary catalog, which is fantastic. I loved it. And you got to see what everybody made who works for the state government. But I think at the time when I was there, we lost like 1,500 subscriptions because of that. And it raised the question internally, did we need to do that? Do we need to do that? And I think it also helped push the bee into having a state employee columnist to take a deeper look at the issues that affected state employment and that universe. So we asked questions about it, and that's what you constantly have to be doing. So if there's one message I want to just deliver to you guys and make sure that we all get this, is that, you know, we don't peer review our work. We don't peer review our data often enough. We don't have the ability to do it in daily journalism especially. So we have to do it ourselves in-house. Look to someone who's not directly associated with your project or with your data, and have them take an independent, clear-eyed view of what you have. I mean, it's the way, only way we can really check ourselves and have these discussions over and over again in your daily and project work. Thanks.